Each and every decision you've made in your life has had an impact, shaped you into the person you are today. But what if I told you that there exists a universe for each of those choices, where things turned out differently? This may be a mere theory in our world, but within the realms of comic books, science fiction, or fantasy, it is a reality that holds infinite wonders and horrors. Either way, they make for some good storytelling. So come with us as we talk about the events occurring now and in the future. Let us discuss the state of the multiverse. Hello and welcome back to the State of the Multiverse podcast with me, your host, Reese. This episode is jam-packed with a lot of stuff. It took me a few days of sitting down just making the whole thing. But we are recording now, and that is what that's what we're all here for. I'd like to start off with just saying welcome back to everybody. Our previous episode managed to get a like from Mark Millar, or Miller, however you want to pronounce it. I say Millar. That's the guy that wrote Old Man Logan and Kick-Ass, Nemesis, a bunch of other comics that have been really popular over the years. So that was pretty cool. And on my art page, Reese O'Connor Images, I managed to get a like from Brian Michael Bendis, which was very, very cool. Whether you like Bendis or not, you know, he's still a big name in the industry, so that's pretty cool. Just thought I'd share that with you all. And we will be discussing some stuff from both those writers today. This week's artist shout out, I'd like to mention to you guys is, I think it's pronounced Stefan Koidl. K-O-I-D-L. He's an artist I've seen through pages like Monsters Club and the various art pages on Instagram. He does very horror-centric stuff, and one of my particular favourites is something I'd love to see in a movie. Like, a lot of his work seems like it would be in a very good horror movie. One of them is, it's like a road in the middle of a forest, and the driver of a car is like stepping out of their vehicle, and they're looking up into the sky, and you see all these people just floating. It's scary but really cool stuff. He has other ones where it's like a little girl walking under the sea, a lot of monster type stuff, but it's the type of stuff I'd love to see in a movie or a TV series. It reminds me a lot of some creepypasta or, you know, scary story channels that you can find on YouTube. But so that's this week's artist shout out. We have a lot of updates from the various publications and companies, so let's get into that. Starting off with Marvel, at D23 we got a few shows that were announced. We're gonna have Miss Marvel, Moon Knight, She-Hulk. And after D23 concluded, I heard there was plans for Miss America. And I heard War Machine as well, but I don't know if either of them have been confirmed yet. But the first three I mentioned have been. Oddly enough, She-Hulk has apparently been receiving some hate. I have no problem with the character. I think it's a really cool character from Marvel. Jennifer Walters, you know, she prefers to stay in her Hulk form most of the time. And she's a lawyer, and I've never encountered any problems with that character, but it seems like there's been some confusion as to what Marvel would be doing with the Hulk, and or with She-Hulk, I should say. Some people believe that, you know, now that we're having a female Thor and, you know, female versions of characters, they're like, oh, so they're going to gender swap the Hulk. These people would not be familiar with the comics, I would guess. For those of you who do not know, Jennifer Walters is the cousin of Bruce Banner, and she gained her powers through a blood transfusion from Bruce after she had been injured or shot. I forget exactly specifically, I think it was shot, but there was no time to get her to a hospital, and Bruce gave her some of his blood, and that eventually turned her into the She-Hulk. You know, when it was written at the time, the science wasn't all accurate, let's say, but at this, you know, it gave us a cool character. And so I'm looking forward to She-Hulk. I'm very excited to see who they cast as the character. I don't know whether they're gonna make She-Hulk completely CGI the way Mark Ruffalo's Hulk is, or if they're just gonna have like a well built actress to play like the Hulk or the She-Hulk in her Hulk form. But we'll just have to wait and see. I mean, hopefully, if it is CGI, it's as good or close to as good as it is for Mark Ruffalo's Hulk. But we'll have to wait and see. Moon Knight, which I am very excited about, as I'm sure a lot of people are. It seems like two actors that are in the potential to play Moon Knight are Shia LaBeouf and Andrew Garfield. And yes, Andrew Garfield was the guy that previously played Spider-Man. And Shia LaBeouf was actually in the Constantine movie with Keanu Reeves. Not a lot of people remember that. But I think both of these actors would be very good for the character, given that the character has multiple personalities and is a very unique Marvel character. I think I'd prefer Andrew Garfield, just because I Shia LaBeouf kind of annoys me. But you know, if they play the character well, who cares? But yeah, looking forward to see that. I recently read the first volume in one of the newer Moon Knight series, and I enjoyed it very much. It was very cool. The art style was really cool. I can't think of the names of the writers or artists, so I'm sorry, but it was very good. He spends a lot of the time as Mr. Knight. So if you guys don't know, that's another one of his kind of personas, where instead of the big white cloak and hood, he has like a white suit and gloves and a tie, and it's cool. It makes for a visually interesting character. But yeah, that should be really cool. Moon Knight, out of those three shows, is the one that I'm looking forward to the most. But you know, Disney Plus is going to have a lot of good TV going on to it, it seems. The Miss Marvel show, apparently it's been said that Miss Marvel will in fact be an Inhuman, and that opens the door for a possible reboot or reintroduction of the Inhumans into the MCU, because they were originally supposed to be they were supposed to have a movie, which was gonna, I think the release date for it would have been like a month or two ago. It was meant to be recently, but that got changed and it got turned into an ABC series, which I never watched. I was looking forward to it. I really was, because Black Bolt is a really interesting character for me. I've been meaning to read his solo series, or his most recent one, I mean. But the Inhumans are a really cool concept, but obviously that show kind of went down in flames. So I think Miss Marvel being an Inhuman would be a good way to kind of open the mainstream audience to that concept. I mean, they were being introduced as a way to kind of substitute for the X-Men, but now that Disney is and Marvel are getting the X-Men back, we can have both, which would be really cool. But I don't really watch Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., but I know the Inhumans have played a big part in that. But then again, it's none of really the big Inhumans, like the royal family. But we shall have to just wait and see, and hopefully it's done well. No casting announcements on any of these shows I can remember. But those three shows should be good. And Miss America, again, is one I'm not familiar with. I know like she's a Latin American character. I'm not sure what her powers are, but I've come across the character once or twice in books, but or games as well, I think. But we'll see. In other news, movie related news, I should say, there was a mural at D23 that had some of the biggest characters in the MCU, mainly the ones that are still around after Endgame. And in that mural, it had, I think it's pronounced Uatu the Watcher, which is a really big character from the comics, and it had a Celestial, which is even bigger, to say the least. But and for the Eternals movie, there was posters given out, or they were shown off, that had different Celestials in it, and it seems like they're going to play a bigger role in the Eternals movie, which I'm really excited about. The Marvel What If series, which will be animated, will have 23 episodes, one for each of the Marvel Cinematic Universe movies, And so some episodes that we know about are like the one that we've known for a while is what if Peggy Carter got the super soldier serum instead of Steve Rogers? So we've seen some images released of Peggy Carter as Captain Britain, which it was pretty cool. And these will be the actors that portrayed everybody in the movie. Like if a character from the movie shows up, it will be the same actor providing the voice. And another one we know about apparently is Zombie Cap versus Bucky Barnes. I guess that these will probably be for the first two Captain America movies, respectively. Maybe if it's not set in World War II for the second one, it could be maybe Steve was the one that fell from the train, and Bucky was the one that got frozen in the end, and they meet up in the modern day, and somehow Steve's a zombie. Either way, Zombie Cap, that should be interesting. The first poster for the Falcon and the Winter Soldier series was shown off, and it wasn't like a photograph poster, it was more of a painted one. But Falcon has his comic accurate suit, not his cap suit from the comics, but his red and white Falcon suit. You don't see the shield, but I'm sure that'll be in the show anyway. And Bucky has finally gotten a haircut. For those of you who are fans of Bucky Barnes with the long hair, I agree, but I think changes can be good. And in the comics, Bucky has short hair a lot of the time anyway. And a detail that a lot of people have been picking up on is that Bucky in this poster, his bionic arm isn't the focus of his part of the shot. So it's people are looking at it as a progression for Bucky Barnes, which I think is really cool. He's not just the weapon anymore. Wyatt Russell has been cast in the Falcon and the Winter Soldier series as U.S. Agent. I'm assuming this is going to be the U.S. government's answer to who they want to be Captain America rather than Sam Wilson. I'm more looking forward to see what the suit is going to look like. I just love when they announce what or show off what the suits are going to look like in whatever movie or show is coming up. And the U.S. Agent suit is really cool. It's like a black version of Captain America's, but with a red and white flag on it. And some of the concept art for Infinity War had Steve Rogers in a similar outfit. And by the way, the concept art for some of the movies in the MCU, especially Infinity War for like Cap and Thor, a lot of people feel like we got cheated. And in some cases, I would agree. I love what we got in each movie, but Thor had some really cool designs, and Cap had looked a bit more kind of not homeless, but like he was actually on the run rather than just wearing a kind of worn down Captain America suit. But yeah, that's neither here nor there now, but either way, Black Panther 2 is after getting a release date of May the 6th, 2020, or 2022. That's a lot of twos. I misread that. I'm sorry. The Eternals cast showed up at D23, and they all stood on stage, and behind each one of them was the concept art of their characters in their suits, respectively. The suits were quite different than to how I expected. I'm not too familiar with the Eternals, but I'm probably going to pick up Neil Gaiman's book soon because I'm a massive fan of his writing anyway, and it's apparently the better modern interpretation of those characters. The costumes were a lot more slicked version or like a smooth than what people expected, but I'm sure the end result will look cool. Idris Elba has expressed a lot of interest in returning as Heimdall in Thor: Love and Thunder, mentioning that because Heimdall is a part of the God family, that he's still out there somewhere. And I mean, I wouldn't mind if he came back, but I think Heimdall should probably stay dead, considering his death was supposed to be motivation for Thor and Infinity War for going after Thanos. I mean, obviously Loki as well, but Heimdall was his best friend and so. But I guess if they want to bring him back, Gemma Chan, who played Minerva, was it in Captain Marvel? I enjoyed Captain Marvel, but it's definitely not my favorite MCU movie. But I think that was the name of her character. But she is confirmed to be playing Cersei in The Eternals. I heard that this was the movie's lead. I haven't heard that like that in any confirmed way. But I was under the assumption that Richard Madden's Icarus would be the kind of the center of the movie, or the protagonist, I guess. But I guess it's more of a group movie, which is probably makes more sense. But you know, I assumed that because in nearly everything I see involving the Eternals, Icarus is always at the front. You know, he's always the kind of the center of it. Kit Harington, Jon Snow from Game of Thrones, has been cast as Dane Whitman, aka the Black Knight in Marvel's Eternals, playing another character in black with a sword. I mean, you know, you can't say the man isn't consistent. But yeah, this should be interesting. I've got no problems with that casting. The Black Knight isn't a character I'm too familiar with. I know some about him, but it's more through what people have told me. Kat Dennings will return as Darcy from the Thor movies in WandaVision, along with Randall Park as Jimmy Woo from Ant-Man and the Wasp. They will both be in that. And then Catherine Hahn, who you guys probably, she's one of those actresses you don't know her name, but you know her from a lot of stuff. She was an Anchorman. She was in The Visit, a bunch of other stuff. She is playing the nosy neighbor in WandaVision. And in the last bit of WandaVision news, concept art was shown of, it's very 1950s style for it's Wanda and Vision sitting on the couch, and behind them is a shadow of them, but the shadow is the comic accurate versions. Like, you see the outline of Scarlet Witch's headband, which is really cool. I'm excited to see if they do that. Well, I mean, if it's in the concept art, they must have something planned. Yeah, there is a rumor that A-Force will apparently be getting a movie, and that's in development. It will feature Captain Marvel and Jane Foster Thor. A-Force, for those who don't know, is basically the female Avengers. It's like every female. Like, if you see an Endgame, the bit where, you know, that's become a bit of a meme now of all Peter's moms, all the female characters, you know, have their girl power moment. Where they all, you know, team up. Like, that's basically what that would consist of, all the female characters, but in a whole movie. I mean, which the majority of those female characters I like. You know, there's very few I wouldn't. I mean, Captain Marvel is a bit of an annoying one, but she serves a purpose, obviously. And I liked her more in Endgame than I liked her in her own movie, so I'll give her that. But after that, we have Werewolf by Night may appear in a future Marvel project. I would guess probably Moon Knight, because I think Moon Knight first showed up in Werewolf by Night issue, I forget the number, but it was, so I think I remember hearing those two characters were kind of close, or they were connected in some way. We'll just get it out of the way, folks. We'll address the Spider-Man stuff. The situation is still unclear. So apparently Sony were willing to give up 25%, but Disney just refused because it wasn't what they wanted. Disney right now is being seen as the bad guy, but you know, at the end of the day, I keep saying to people when they ask me about it that all I care about is that Spider-Man gets to keep interacting with the Avengers. You know, that we keep Tom Holland. You know, because I don't think Sony would be able to do as successfully without the help of the MCU. Not to take credit away from the movies that they've made some really good stuff. I mean, obviously the Raimi trilogy, and then most recently Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, that's a fantastic movie. But the re-release of Spider-Man Far From Home with additional 2 minutes of footage was received very poorly. It didn't make nearly as much money as people were expecting, and it seems like it can be an advantage and a disadvantage depending on how you look at it. The general audiences of now are way more in touch with what's happening than they were, say, 10 years ago. I mean, people know, you know, that the who has the rights to what character. I mean, I'm not saying everybody does, but especially with this whole Spider-Man situation, people are aware, at least of what we're being told, what's going on. But they're aware that, you know, if this deal doesn't happen, Spider-Man won't be in the connected movies and blah blah blah. But regardless of however this turns out, Tom Holland is still under contract to appear in two more films, and he is basically trying to reassure the fans on whichever way it turns out, it's going to be fine. And he says that what Sony has planned is really, really good. But there's a rumor that the latest rumor that Spider-Man is involved with is that he can come back to the MCU, but he will also have to make an appearance in Venom 2 and tie in Sony's movies into the MCU. That means Venom, Carnage, Morbius, which everyone keeps forgetting about, myself included. Like I find myself going, oh yeah, there's a Morbius movie being made with Jared Leto. But yeah, that would all become part of the MCU. Yeah. I mean, hopefully we get a legitimate update in the next few weeks. And preferably with Spider-Man returning to the MCU. Black Widow had a poster, concept art poster released. You can see, I finally know the name of this character that Florence Pugh is playing. Yelena Belova. She's like a sister Black Widow figure from the Red Room. She is wearing the green outfit from Infinity War that Black Widow wore, so don't think she's going to get to keep that. The poster also features what is probably my favorite thing about it is David Harbour as Red Guardian, the Russian counterpart to Captain America. You get a sneak peek at his mask, a bit of his, the chest part of his outfit. It looks really cool. The Black Widow's White Widow suit was shown off at D23, and that was really cool. That's another suit from the comics. And yeah, just Black Widow looks like it's going to be good. The actress that played Ghost in Ant-Man the Wasp, Hannah John Kamen, confirms that Ghost is in fact alive. In Blade, Dracula will appear as a villain. Hulk actor Mark Ruffalo still has one movie left on his contract. The actor playing Seg-El on Krypton, or at least until it was cancelled, Cameron Cuff, wants to play Cyclops in the MCU. Someone made a comment on Twitter that the Winter Soldier had been recast with Cameron, and he responded saying that he thinks Sebastian does a great job, and the character he wants to play has ruby quartz glasses, so that's obviously a nod towards Cyclops. I think he would play a very good Cyclops, from judging by what I've seen on Krypton in season 1. I still have to go on season 2, but yeah, that would be really cool. And not in complete Marvel news, but actor Marvel news, Tom Hiddleston is apparently being rumored to portray Hades in a live action Hercules movie. That would be pretty cool. I'd like that. I mean, I'm not fully behind all these live action remakes. I mean, some of them have been okay, but Hercules is one of my favorite Disney movies, so if that's made into a live action version, hopefully that would be good. In Star Wars news, Ewan McGregor will reprise his role as Obi-Wan Kenobi for a Disney Plus series. And for those of us who liked Obi-Wan Kenobi in the prequels, played by Ewan McGregor, that is very exciting. We've all been waiting for this confirmation for years. It was going to be a movie, now it's going to be a Disney Plus series. For those of you that know me, I've been very jaded with Star Wars over the last few years, mainly since The Last Jedi. But I loved Rogue One, I really enjoyed The Force Awakens. I still haven't bothered with Solo, but yeah, no, it seems that they have a lot of really cool stuff in development, especially for that. And I have some people are wondering where exactly this takes place in the timeline. I think it's 8 years after Revenge of the Sith, is what they said. I'm wondering if Darth Maul is going to show up. That'd be pretty cool. Alan Tudyk and Diego Luna will reprise their roles from Rogue One for a Disney Plus series. That is awesome. I love Alan Tudyk and most things that he's done that I've seen, most particularly lately in Doom Patrol as Mr. Nobody. That was awesome. I can't remember the name of the robot he played in Rogue One, but that was like the really tall one that works with Cassian Andor, played by Diego Luna. Yeah, that should be really cool. The Mandalorian series that's coming to Disney Plus, along with this one with Alan Tudyk and Diego Luna and Ewan McGregor's Obi-Wan Kenobi series. Got some good Star Wars stuff coming. Lastly, in Star Wars news, the Rise of Skywalker trailer came out, or the second trailer. As jaded as I have been with the series the last few years, I'm gonna go see it. I just know I will. We've heard that the final moments of this last movie will be mind melting, apparently. So it's kind of something you just have to go see, or else it's gonna get spoiled. But the biggest thing everyone's taken away from this Rise of Skywalker trailer is that Dark Rey was there. Rey was wearing a black cloak, and she had a double-sided red lightsaber. And that was really cool to finally see. If they were gonna send Rey to the dark side, they probably would have set it up in the last movie. But it seems like every time she's the opportunity to become tempted by the dark side comes up, she immediately kind of slaps it away. So this is probably just a vision, or some kind of test, or maybe Palpatine, who we know is in the movie in some capacity, maybe him or his ghost or something like that is testing her, or trying to corrupt her with the Force. But so that will be hopefully a good way to end this sequel trilogy with the Rise of Skywalker. For the most part, I'm kind of just more waiting to see what's going to happen. I'm not really, whereas I would theorize about comic book movies and stuff like that, I'm not really putting much thought into this. I'll just take it for whatever it is and hopefully enjoy it as a movie. And in DC Comics news, the Joaquin Phoenix, Todd Phillips Joker movie had its premiere at the Venice Film Festival and received an 8-minute standing ovation. And has, the last time I heard of a proper number, the tomato meter on Rotten Tomatoes for this movie was 88%. And that is fantastic, because everyone's been thinking it's either going to be like the best movie ever, or it's going to be a dumpster fire. And I'm so happy that it's getting such great reception. I can't wait for it. It's just over a month away, hard to believe. But I saw a bit of the footage of the standing ovation. I've watched one or two interviews with some of the people involved, and it's not going to be your traditional comic book movie, and by that it's not going to be the MCU. Obviously it's DC, but it's not going to be for kids, so anybody that wants to go on a family trip to see Joker, I wouldn't recommend it. It's been rated, I think it's rated R for Americans, and probably like 16s to 18s here. I'm not sure exactly what they're going to give it. It has disturbing behavior and sexual content of some kind in it, so it's not going to be very tame, let's say. I was about to say not very good, but it's going to be good, I'd say. Nathan Fillion has been cast in a mysterious role in The Suicide Squad, James Gunn's upcoming movie. I love Nathan Fillion. For those of you that don't know, he is a popular kind of cult actor, I guess you could say. He gained notoriety through the cancelled series Firefly, but he's appeared in a bunch of other stuff. You probably know his voice from a few things. If you watch Big Mouth, he appears as an animated version of himself. He's voiced Green Lantern for a few years in various projects. He was in Guardians of the Galaxy 1, which most people don't know. He's the blue alien that makes some suggestions about Peter Quill, but then Groot kind of sticks his twigs up his nose and sorts that out. But he was also going to appear in Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 as Wonder Man, but for whatever reason that didn't happen. One of my favorite roles that he's done is in the series called The Santa Clarita Diet. He plays a guy named Gary in that. I'd highly recommend that. I can't say any more without spoiling it, but that is very, very good. It's a good series. It's still a shame that it got cancelled. Taika Waititi is also reportedly in talks to appear in The Suicide Squad. God knows who he's going to play, but if that happens, that's going to be amazing. LaMonica Garrett will appear in 10 Arrowverse episodes as the Monitor and the Anti-Monitor, respectively. That LaMonica Garrett is the actor who I talked about a few weeks ago playing the monitor and the anti-monitor. I couldn't remember his name at the time. That should be really cool. I still need to get caught up on Supergirl. I really kind of lost my interest in that show, but because everything's so connected, you just need to know what's going on. So I should do that soon before everything starts coming back. Oh, Titans is actually back this week, which I'm really looking forward to. Titans season 2. Yeah. Logan Marshall Green tweets out, and I quote, "Darkseid is, Thanos isn't." So that seemingly means that he may be involved in Ava DuVernay's New Gods movie. So who do you guys think he's going to play? I should mention Logan Marshall Green he's getting popularity. He's a good actor. He was most recently in a movie called Upgrade, I think. I haven't watched it, but it's kind of like a sci-fi robot version of Venom, almost, where a man has something in him that controls him or gives him these abilities. I heard it was quite good. If you've ever seen a movie called Devil, where it's a bunch of people stuck in an elevator, he's one of the guys in that. Most people say he looks a lot like Tom Hardy. I would agree. When they both grow their beards out, they look a lot similar. But he was also in Prometheus. He was the scientist and partner of the Elizabeth Shaw character. I'm wondering who he's going to play if he is involved in the New Gods. I mean, everyone's first instinct, it seems, is like, oh, so-and-so, whoever talks about New Gods, if it's a man, it's like, oh, he's playing Mr. Miracle. I mean, I think he could do a good one, or a good Mr. Miracle, but maybe he's Orion. But yeah, we'll leave it open. But maybe Mr. Miracle, maybe Orion, maybe would they put him as Light Ray? I'm not sure. We shall see. Apparently a Dead Man show may be in the works. Boston Brand getting some more notoriety. That's pretty cool. For those of you that are unaware of that character, Boston Brand, aka Dead Man, was a circus performer who, I forget, it depends on the story, but for whatever reason, he was killed in the middle of a performance, and his spirit was chosen by this god, I forget the name of the god, but he basically has to stay on Earth in a ghost form, possess people to help solve crimes, which is cool. He's usually a part of the Justice League Dark alongside John Constantine, Zatanna, and Swamp Thing, etc. David F. Sandberg says the next Shazam suit will have improvements, and he talked about how the original Superman cameo had a lot more to it rather than just him showing up at the end of the movie and Freddy gasping. He originally sat down and they talked for a minute, and I forget exactly how he said it, but it finished with Freddy kind of leaning on Superman and saying, "I have so many questions." Yeah, I mean, if they sort this stuff out with Henry Cavill, I mean, I like his Superman. It's not the traditional one, but I think by the end of Justice League, he was the most like Christopher Reeve that we ever had, so. But yeah. And keeping in the trend of good horror directors making good comic book movies, well, hopefully keeping up the trend, Andy Muschietti, who has most recently made the two It films, he has confirmed his next movie will be The Flash. That movie has gone through a roller coaster ride of rewrites and new directors and things like that. So that is good to hear. As far as we know, Ezra Miller will still reprise his role as The Flash from Justice League. Kevin Smith, I'm quoting him here, "Get the fucking Snyder cut out there, man. Let's see what was cooking. It's money to be made." That's the most Kevin Smith statement I've ever heard about a movie in a while. I try to not focus on the whole Snyder cut thing. I enjoyed the Justice League movie for what we got. It's definitely not a perfect movie. It's not the Justice League movie I want, but I think it has good moments. And obviously, I would like to see what Zack Snyder's original idea was like. I've heard a lot of cool things. And it slipped past some people that in the trailer, we actually hear Darkseid's voice. It sounds like it's mixed in with Steppenwolf's, but when they're saying, no protectors here, no lanterns, this world will fall like all the others, like that ominous speech. A part of that is actually Darkseid's voice, and I forget the name of the actor, but was he Irish? I'm not sure. But they cast a certain actor as Darkseid, and some of the lines were recorded, but he would have been the villain in the sequel. Either Darkseid, or if they were going to do the Legion of Doom, we'll have to, or I suppose we'll have to wait and see. But we're probably not going to get a Justice League 2, unless the rumors of James Gunn making a Justice League movie are true, which I would like, but we'll have to just wait and see, I guess. I'd say that would be more like what he's doing with the Suicide Squad, where you're not sure if it's a sequel or not. In other news, David Ramsey, a.k.a. Diggle from Arrow, has apparently been pitched a Green Lantern TV show. And if that doesn't make any sense, it's because John Diggle on an alternate Earth in the Arrowverse is a Green Lantern. Assumingly, he's John Stewart, that version of the character. That would be pretty cool if they could pull that off on a TV budget. The trailer for Birds of Prey got leaked. I have steered clear from it, but I have seen some of the more clearer pictures from it. You see Harley Quinn, the Huntress, Black Canary, Black Mask, and Harley's hyenas, briefly. I'm more waiting until they officially release the proper trailer. But yeah, I'm hoping Birds of Prey is good. And I've got two pieces of news that are not comic book related. These fall into the, fantasy genre, I guess you could say. His Dark Materials got a new trailer, and I watched it. It was pretty cool. That is a project that is a collaboration between HBO and the BBC, as far as I know. Some of the actors involved are James McAvoy, Lin-Manuel Miranda, Daphne Keane from Logan. It's a reinterpretation of, or it's another adaptation, I guess you could say, of a series of novels. I can't remember the name of the author. I'm sorry if you guys are familiar with the series and you're probably like, that's who wrote it. You're probably screaming at the at your phones or however you're listening to this, but I'm kind of hoping most of you aren't familiar. You may be familiar with the previous adaptation, The Golden Compass, a movie from years ago. I used to watch that as a kid sometimes, but I never really understood it properly at least when I was little. And I've heard it's a very poor interpretation of the series. That's why I never got a sequel. But yeah, I'm looking forward to this. And for some of you, hopefully more than a few of you, are looking forward to the Penny Dreadful series. The sequel series to the original that ran for three seasons. Penny Dreadful, City of Angels, has begun production. It is set in 1938 Los Angeles. Some of the actors that are involved are Natalie Dormer. Her character hasn't been revealed yet. If you're familiar with the original series, the character of Mr. Clare, the actor that played him, I think it was Rory Kinnear was his name, he will be playing a different character, but he will be in the show. And Nathan Lane, who is a famous Broadway actor, but also was in movies like The Birdcage, which I still need to watch. But he, most people from my generation would know him as Timon from The Lion King. He will be playing a grizzled detective, it seems. I love Penny Dreadful. I know some of you out there do as well. Hopefully they don't screw it up, but I forget some of the other actors they announced, but it seems like it's going to be good. Having it set in America will be interesting. Maybe we'll be getting some Native American monsters and stuff like that. Or maybe Latin American monsters, that would be pretty cool. Both of those cultures have some really cool legends and mythology to it. It's really cool, so we'll have to just wait and see. So this section is going to be a new one for this podcast, and it's going to be about fan casting ideas, because you'll be going through social media and you'll see like, oh, this actor should play this character. And everybody's got their own preferences, but I've got some ideas here. To split into two sections, mine and not mine. I'm going to start off with the not mine. So these are ones that I've seen online, and I'm just going to talk about them, see if I think they could work. And if you guys have any input on these ideas, you know, feel free to get in contact through Instagram, and we can discuss it more. And if they're good or bad, we shall see. But these are all just hypothetical. We'll just see. So firstly, this is in the not mine section. We have Ethan Hawke as Commissioner Gordon in the new Batman. I think that would be a great choice, considering that this Batman is meant to be younger. So obviously Commissioner Gordon wouldn't be like 80 yet. He's a good actor, so yeah, that'd be a good one. Daniel Craig as Magneto. That one could be hit or miss, really. Because from what I've heard through his experiences in James Bond, he's not really all for the whole action thing. He could probably play it well, but I don't think... I mean, I love Michael Fassbender and Ian McKellen's version of that character, but maybe he wouldn't be the best choice for that. KJ Apa, or Apa, depending on how you want to say it, I guess, as Terry McGinnis. And these next few are for if they were going to adapt the Batman Beyond Return of the Joker animated movie. I'm not too familiar with this guy. I know he's in Riverdale. I think he plays Archie. Based on the look of him with like black hair in the image, yeah, I think he could probably pull it off. Kurt Russell as Bruce Wayne, like the older Bruce Wayne. I mean, I could see it, but I'd prefer Michael Keaton, obviously, kind of like what Kevin Smith has said before. But yeah, Kurt Russell could do it, a good old Bruce Wayne, I'd say. Jodie Foster as Commissioner Barbara Gordon. That would be interesting. I think that would be pretty good. And lastly, for that section, Batman Beyond, David Tennant as the Joker. I think he could play a good, slightly older, you know, revived Joker. That'd be pretty cool. Yeah, I think he could play the version that is in that animated movie, because he doesn't look as young as he used to. Not saying the guy's getting old now, but you know, like, you wouldn't believe him as a Joker, like, in his late 20s or something like that. But the resurrected Joker in Batman Beyond, I think that'd be a good fit for him. Sophie Cookson as Batgirl. You guys may know her from Kingsman, which is really all I'm familiar with her through. She played Roxy, I think. Yeah, I mean, that'd be pretty good. I mean, most people, when they're casting Batgirl, it's Emma Stone and Anna Kendrick and Daisy Ridley, all, you know, good choices, but you know, it's kind of hard to pick one for Barbara Gordon, Batgirl. But that's a name I haven't heard before in that ring. So, and lastly, in the not mine section, Evan Rachel Wood as Black Canary. That'd be pretty good. I mean, I'm looking forward to seeing what they do with Black Canary and Birds of Prey. I love the look they're going for, style-wise, but hopefully it's not style over substance. But in terms of obviously looking like the character and then having good acting capability, Evan Rachel Wood would be very good for Black Canary, I think, anyway. And then I have a few group picks of mine that I did before, or I've talked to people about before, but this is my first time mentioning it on the podcast. If you know the podcast Wolverine: The Long Night, that's the first season of a Wolverine podcast, and this has two seasons now, but I haven't listened to the second one yet properly. I've just been kind of saving the episodes up for when I have time. But the first season is a murder mystery in Alaska type thing. It was very good. I've listened to the whole thing twice. It's really entertaining. So for Logan, I would have Richard Armitage, who actually provided the voice in the podcast. For Agent Marshall, I would have Malcolm Barrett. He played Hoover in Preacher, and he was also in Santa Clarita Diet for an episode, and he was also in The Boys recently. He's a very good actor, and he's just who I imagine when I'm listening to that podcast, because these are based off of either my opinions on who I think could play the character well, or who comes to mind when I'm listening to the podcast. For Agent Pierce, I have Eliza Coupe. I think that's how you pronounce her name. I know her through the last season or two of Scrubs. I watched a bit of it when it was coming to an end. She's just kind of who I imagine with that Agent Pierce character. I think she's on that show Future Man, but I don't really watch that. For Prophet, I have James Spader, aka Ultron, but he'd be pretty good, I think, for that. He's not a major character in the story, but he does have a role to play. For Joseph Langrock, I have Gary Oldman. I think that would be pretty cool. The voice actor sounded a lot like Gary Oldman when Gary Oldman does an American accent. For Deputy Bobby, I kind of debated this one between a few different actors, but I kind of went with Ezra Miller for Deputy Bobby. Because there's a few sides to this character that I think he could probably play well. For Hudson Langrock, I went with Dane DeHaan. He was in Chronicle, a good movie you should check out. He was also in The Amazing Spider-Man 2 and stuff like that. For the fisherman who we are introduced to at the start of the story, I have Mark Boone Jr. from Sons of Anarchy. He was also in 30 Days a Night. He's a good actor, and just who again comes to mind when I hear it, the narration from that particular character. For Sherman Moses, I have Jeremy Davies, who has been in a few different things, but I mainly know him for playing Richie in the Constantine TV series. He was also Dr. Death, was it, in at the Elseworlds crossover last year for Arrow, Flash, and Supergirl, but I can't remember the name of that character exactly. The ca that character, the character in this podcast is Native American, I believe. I wasn't aware of that when I first came up with the casting choice, but the voice actor does sound a lot like Jeremy Davies, at least in the roles that I've known him. He also played Balder in God of War 2018. I'm not too familiar with Native American actors, so I couldn't pick one that would be quite accurate, but based off of the voice acting, that's my idea. For the taxidermist, I have Paul Giamatti, who is a very good actor. I was first introduced to him through, probably not through his best role, but through The Amazing Spider-Man 2 when he was the Rhino. And then for Mallory, I have Isabelle Fuhrman. She is a good actress from what I know. Most people only know her from that movie Orphan, which the only reason I haven't watched that is because I know the plot twist. But yeah, I've heard it's good. Next we have Tom King's Mr. Miracle, which is a book I'm very fond of, and I mentioned it in a previous episode. For the actor to play Mr. Miracle, aka Scott Free, I have Matt Bomer, who was most recently Larry Trainor in Doom Patrol. Even some of the panels in the comic book look like Matt Bomer, so I figured, that was probably a good idea. For Big Barda, I have Gwendolyn Christie or Catherine Waterston. Gwendolyn Christie is obviously Brienne Tarth from Game of Thrones. And Catherine Waterston is Tina Goldstein from the Fantastic Beasts movies. I think that's that. She was also in Alien Covenant as well. For Funky Flashman, I have Donald Gleason. For Orion, I have Joel Edgerton. For Light Ray, I have Garrett Hedlund. And for both Highfather and Darkseid, I have a few different ideas. So for Highfather, I have Charles Dance, Hugh Laurie. If he was still with us, I'd have Philip Seymour Hoffman, and Donald Sutherland. And then for Darkseid, I have Charles Dance again, James Earl Jones, Michael McAleaton. He was Roose Bolton on Game of Thrones, or Javier Bardem. For the female Fury characters, I have Eva Green for Lashina. And for Mad Harriet, I have either Eva Green, Natalie Dormer, or Juno Temple. For Bernadette, I have Charlize Theron. Stompa, I have Ronda Rousey. And then for Granny Goodness, you gotta go with Kathy Bates. I mean, she looks so much like Granny Goodness. And the last fan cast for today, we have Kingdom Come. For Superman, I have Jon Hamm. And then for Wonder Woman, we could either keep Gal Gadot from the movies, or Jamie Alexander, I think, could play a good Wonder Woman. Or if we wanted to make the Trinity all look slightly older, obviously, we'd have Lucy Lawless, who played Xena. I'm not saying that the actress looks old, but you know, the Wonder Woman in the comics is meant, or in that comic, is meant to be older, and she actually does look a bit like Lucy Lawless. So, for Batman, I'd have Josh Brolin. For Green Lantern, I'd have Ian Glen, Jor from Game of Thrones. For Norman McKay, I'd have Ian McElhenney. He was Sir Barristan Selmy on Game of Thrones, and he also plays Seg-El's grandfather on Krypton. And for the Spectre, I have, providing the physical part of the role, I have Damian Lewis, and for the vocals, I have Keith David, who has a very recognizable voice, but still, I think he could do a good job. Next, we have two scenarios or ideas, I guess, for what, well, one is what could have happened, and another one is what could happen. The first one, which is what could have happened, is if Thor had snapped his fingers while wearing the gauntlet, he could have lost his arm and would have had to get it replaced with an Uru metal arm, like in the comics. That would have been really cool, I think. I mean, Thor really, really wanted to snap and bring everybody back, but you know, it ended up being Hulk. He even during the fight with Thanos, he tries to go for the gauntlet a few times, and when they first start fighting Thanos, he's like, straight away he goes for the head with both weapons. I mean, I really like Thor's metal arm in the comics. He's had a few. Well, the first one was kind of silvery gray. Then in the Avengers series I'm reading, he has a gold one along with a gold version of his hammer, but it's not like as powerful as Mjolnir. And I think in the recent War of the Realms comic, I was told about what happened, but I saw a picture of him with the Destroyer arm from the first Thor movie, so the Destroyer from Asgard. And that's the arm that old King Thor has, so it's cool to see them kind of get closer to that. And the other scenario is, since She-Hulk is a lawyer, it would be cool if in her Disney Plus series we had Matt Murdock or Daredevil kind of reintroduced into the MCU after the cancellation of his Netflix series. I think that would be really cool, considering they're both lawyers. They'd obviously interact at some point. So after the last episode that I did, I put up some polls on the Instagram story of this podcast account. And thank you to everyone that voted. The results were between Kingdom Come and Injustice, it was completely even, 50-50. For the Batman White Knight or Dark Multiverse, it was 2-3 in favor of the Dark Multiverse. For Old Man Logan and Thanos Wins, it was 3-2 in favor of Old Man Logan. So I will cover the other ones eventually. But Kingdom Come and Injustice especially are really kind of expansive stories. Kingdom Come is one book, but at the same time, there's a lot to unpack with that one book, and then Justice just goes on for years, literally. But so today I'm going to cover Old Man Logan by Mark Millar and Steve McNiven, and the origins of the evil Batman from the Dark Knight's metal event that spawned from the Dark Multiverse. If you guys don't want to have either of these spoiled, feel free to skip to later on. This will probably take up a good portion of the podcast. They will have spoilers for both stories involved. The Old Man Logan, I'm just going to go through basically the whole story and what was interesting and, you know, like what was good. But for the Dark Knight's metal stuff, it's going to be the origins of each one, and it's going to be, you know, explaining how each one came to be. So if you'd rather pick up the book of each one of Old Man Logan, and then you can get a book with all the origins of those Batman yourselves, if you want to do that, feel free to skip past this. But if you want to stick around, all the better. We're going to have some fun with this, because it was very fun for me to go back and just put the stories together and do all that type of stuff. So yeah, we will get to Kingdom Come and Injustice in due time. Now, Old Man Logan. We start off with Logan looking visibly a lot older, living on a farm with his wife and two children. He lives in a world that looks very barren, and he's living on a farm, but his animals and anything he has that he could make money off of, they're not exactly in the best condition, so they won't be able to be sold or bought by anybody. So he needs money, because the landlords that he has are, let's just say, not the nicest of folk. His landowners are the Hulk Gang. These are the grandchildren of Bruce Banner. They show up to the farm looking for that month's rent. And when Logan doesn't have it, they threaten to beat him up. And when they do, Logan resists letting his claws out and fighting back. And they tell him to give double the next month, so he has 1 month to make up a lot of money. Shortly after, a blind Hawkeye arrives and offers a financial opportunity. Exactly what they have to deliver something, and what exactly it is isn't specified, but there's a lot of money involved, so Wolverine, you know, reluctantly accepts. They travel in the spider buggy that used to belong to Peter Parker. The first destination they arrive at has been decimated by the Moloids. These are these underground creatures, but they're definitely not things you'd like to encounter. Hawkeye is happy to have the Wolverine with him, but Logan tells him the Wolverine's dead. They are attacked by a gang of Ghost Riders. Hawkeye manages to kill them all, but Logan doesn't fight. Hawkeye is understandably irritated, to say the least, that his friend didn't help him. And he asks, what did the villains do to Logan? Logan responds with, they broke me. Then their next destination is Hammer Falls, in Nevada. This is the last location of Mjolnir, Thor's hammer, when Thor was defeated by Magneto and the Absorbing Man. It's a tourist attraction and almost like a pilgrim spot, where people come to pray and hope for the return of the superhero, which Hawkeye and Logan both know isn't going to happen. It's located in the area that Kingpin rules over. And this Kingpin is not Wilson Fisk, but that's another topic. They encounter Hawkeye's ex-wife, who is now married to a very open and polite Ultron 8. She is the youngest child of Peter Parker. She tells them about their daughter going to fight the Kingpin and getting herself captured. Hawkeye tells Logan that he'll be paid double for helping. They head to Salt Lake City In a stadium, the Kingpin releases some dinosaurs from the Savage Land to kill Ashley's teammates. Ashley is Hawkeye's daughter. When they try to rescue her, they find her in a Spider-Woman outfit. And when the moment becomes open, she kills the Kingpin and takes his place. And she tries to have Hawkeye killed. When they escape, they're being chased by her men, and the ground falls through, and their pursuers are eaten by the Moloids. They escape thanks to the spider buggy, which, luckily enough, can do whatever a spider can. The next place they arrive at is Electroville. The Baxter Building has somehow travelled all the way from the East Coast to the middle of America, and now resides over the corpse of Loki, which is quite large in the comic. A lot of the events that led to all these landmarks and how the world got to be here are left quite open to interpretation, or left to the reader's imagination. Speaking of the Baxter Building, the fate of Reed and Sue Richards, the Mr. Fantastic and the Invisible Woman, are unknown. Mount Rushmore has a new addition, which we will get to later. Logan tells Hawkeye what happened the night the villains attacked, when Hawkeye keeps pressing him for information. The villains killed Jubilee from the X-Men. Some of the villains that showed up were Doc Ock, Strife, Claw, etc. Wolverine killed them all, one by one. Green Goblin, Silver Samurai, on and on, hacking, slashing, decapitating, tearing them apart. The only villain left alive is Bullseye. He begs and tells Wolverine he's supposed to be their friend. The only villain there was Mysterio all along. He had tricked Wolverine into slaughtering every single member of the X-Men, thinking that they were villains, fooling all of Logan's senses to do so. Realizing what he had done, and after sobbing profusely for a while, Wolverine wanders and eventually lays down on a train tracks and lets the oncoming train run over his neck. Logan healed, but Wolverine died, and the claws haven't come out since, in nearly 50 years. When they come to a bridge, a kid named Dwight tells them to pay 80 cents to cross the bridge or be killed by an army of ants. Dwight wears the helmet of Hank Pym, the original Ant-Man, and they pay the 80 cents, and Logan wonders if the kid was being serious about the army of ants, and they look down into the cavern below the bridge, and seeing the hundreds of skeletal remains, their question is quickly answered, and 80 cents is a good price to pay. They are chased through Doom's Head, an area that's run by, you guessed it, Dr. Doom, by a symbiote-infected Tyrannosaurus Rex. They are only saved by a last-minute intervention by Black Bolt of the Inhumans, and with a whisper, the power from his voice drops the creature and separates it from the symbiote, and it is revealed that he works with Emma Frost. She has married Dr. Doom to preserve herself and what remains of the mutant race. She reveals that the mutant race is in fact doomed. There hasn't been one born in 40 years, and only 20 remain. As they leave, they are watched on by Dr. Doom, ever silent. Osborn City, Ohio. Logan still doesn't know what they're delivering. Pym falls, named for obvious reasons, judging by the fact that there's a giant dead body of Hank Pym in his giant man form. Yes. New Babylon. The delivery is revealed to be 99 vials of super soldier serum to be used in a rebellion against the president. Both men are betrayed and shot by undercover SHIELD agents. Hawkeye won't beg for his life and is shot in the head. the people they were supposed to meet with were actually working for the president. How did the president of now become to be? Well, 50 years ago, the Red Skull defeated Captain America. He took the White House and the East Coast, allowing the rest of the country to be divided between the other villains. Now, President Red Skull stands in front of his trophies, a case that consists of Captain America's shield, Iron Man's armor, Strange's cloak, Thor's helmet, Spider-Man's mask, the Thing's hand, Vision's head, pieces of Daredevil, Cyclops, and Captain Marvel's costumes, and the Silver Surfer's broken board, all while he wears the cowl of his former enemy. His men bring up the bodies of Hawkeye and Logan. Logan heals and begins to fight the Red Skull. Red Skull, wanting to make it even, tells his security to leave. The Red Skull tries to kill him with the ebony blade of the Black Knight, but Logan uses Captain America's shield to defend himself. When pinned to the ground after the fight, Red Skull mocks Logan due to his inability to kill him. He is swiftly proved wrong by the shield that decapitates him. Before he is swarmed by Red Skull security, Logan uses what remains of Iron Man's suit to escape with a briefcase full of money. The suit almost gets him home, but fails en route. Another day and a half later, Logan arrives home. A neighbor waits for him. A neighbor waits for Logan and tells him that the Hulk gang got bored and showed up 2 weeks early, slaughtering Logan's wife and children. The neighbor says they'll help him bury them, but revenge isn't an option. When over the next two pages, the pages are blacked out except for one word, snicked. So now Wolverine has returned. The claws are out, and Logan says those words, "My name isn't Logan, it's Wolverine." While attempting to wash off the blood from Logan's family, one of the members of the Hulk gang is dragged underwater and shredded. Another soon follows. Three other Hulks reside in a bar, one feasting on an arm while the other two entertain themselves with toys of the dead children. The lights go out. None survive. Logan dispatches the other Hulks as they leave at the local whorehouse. At the lair of the Hulks, one of them is used as a bomb by Logan. His attack commences. Soon enough, only Bruce Banner is left. Bruce, now old and frail in appearance, has changed a great deal in the decades since the heroes lost. Having taken the Abomination's land and spawning his degenerate family with She-Hulk, who was the only person who he thought he could breathe with, he has clearly lost his mind. Now still in his human form, he enjoys the chance to fight Wolverine once more. He still retains the strength of the Hulk. He had his family kill Logan's so he could have his old opponent back. Infuriated by that statement, Logan runs his banner through with his claws. Bruce becomes the Hulk, saying, "Yeah, that was a stupid mistake. You shouldn't have made me angry. People piss themselves when I get angry." In this story, the Hulk resembles the Blob, grotesque and overweight, balding on top. He's also green and somehow uglier. He eats Logan, and the fight is over. 12 hours later, Bruce's only family members left, Billy Bob and Baby Bruce Jr., find him. He tells Billy Bob of what happened, but is interrupted by severe stomach cramps. His food comes back up, clawing out the back of him as Wolverine finishes off the Hulk from the inside out. Logan allows Billy Bob to live, but takes Baby Bruce Jr., payback for what the Hulk had done to him. 1 month later, Logan's family grieves. The neighbors are shocked by Logan's plan. Seeing as he's got nothing else to do, Logan will bring law back to the country. Leaving with Bruce Jr. on his back, he will make the world better than it is. And that is just my quick version of the Old Man Logan story. It's what the 2017 movie Logan was loosely based on. As you can probably tell by the amount of characters in that book, there was no way that movie was going to be made at that time. The amount of characters that they legally couldn't use is, I can't even name. I think it's a really good story. It really embodies Mark Millar's writing style in terms of, you know, great writing with shock value in it as well, but also there's some really crazy shit in there. Mark Millar is a divisive writer, but from what I've read so far, that being Old Man Logan, Civil War, maybe one other book, I can't remember. I liked it, but I understand he's not for everybody. I understand his work on The Ultimates and was kind of controversial, but overall looked out in a good light. And then some of his series like Nemesis have some very, very dark subject matter, but I for one enjoyed Old Man Logan. I would highly recommend it. It would be great to see in an actual faithful movie adaptation, but at the same time, Logan stands, you know, above and beyond the comic book, I think. But that's mainly because I grew up watching Hugh Jackman as Wolverine. But, yeah, I mean, some people think that, you know, the whole story is worth it just to have a T-Rex that's covered in a Venom symbiote. But, yeah, if you're a fan of the Old Man Logan story, or if you're now going to consider reading it, that would be great if you could let me know. The story of Old Man Logan has continued since the first book. I think he was involved in Secret Wars, and then he became part of the main continuity, but I haven't read any of that, so I'm not too sure. But the story itself, I think, is good in its own self-contained way. Now, the Dark Knight's medal, the evil Batman from that event, I will go through the origins of each one in a similar fashion to how I did the Old Man Logan story. First off, we have the Red Death, and this is a Batman who is a combination of Bruce Wayne and Barry Allen, the Flash. This origin takes place on Earth negative 52, because these evil Batmen come from the Dark Multiverse, which is underneath the main multiverse. The Batman of this Earth uses the technology of the Flash's enemies, the Rogues, to try and fight the Flash. It is revealed that he wants the Flash to help him alter history so the Bat family doesn't die. But the Flash tries to warn him of the problems with messing with time and the repercussions it can have. He ends up using the Batmobile against the Flash, and when that doesn't help as much, the Flash is still trying to reason with Batman, and Batman manages to use the Flash's compassion against him. When he knocks out the Flash and eventually the Flash wakes up, he finds himself chained to the Batmobile, and despite the Flash's warnings, Batman intentionally tries to force his way into the Speed Force, which obviously will have negative results, as Barry warned. Through forcing his way into the Speed Force, the result is horrific. They seemingly both die. They return, and they are now one and the same, both Bruce Wayne and Barry Allen. Bruce Wayne has control of the body, but Barry Allen, similar to how Dr. Martin Stein with Firestorm, is just a message, is just a distant voice in his head. Barry, that's all Barry is now. He has no body. They have a suit that is a mixture of Batman and the Flash. It is red armor with spikes all over. It's very armor plated look. It is, and when they run, it's not lightning that comes out from behind them. It is glowing bats. When they return, they instantly kill all the villains in Gotham. Barry tries to warn Bruce against trusting the Batman who laughs, but he quickly gets silenced. The Batman Who Laughs convinces the Red Death to leave with him as his world ends. The Dawnbreaker, taking place on Earth -32. Bruce's parents, as you can probably expect, are shot in front of him in Crime Alley. But instead of feeling fear, he feels nothing. A black void fills him. He watches as Joe Chill runs away after killing the only two people he loved in the world. Feeling no fear, he is selected to join the Green Lantern Corps, and he chases after Joe Chill and uses the power of the ring to take vengeance. But when he tries to kill Joe Chill, the ring informs him that lethal force has not been authorized. Bruce's willpower and hate and emotion are so strong that he pushes through the programming of the ring and makes something new of the Green Lantern power that has been bestowed upon him, corrupting it and polluting what makes it good. He pushes through and activates the lethal force option, killing Joe Chill. Ever since then, the constructs the ring makes are disturbing. And when he tries to resurrect his parents, they become horrific zombies. He stops that from continuing, allowing them to rest, but still, it stays with him. And he continues to use the power of the corrupted Green Lantern ring to protect Gotham the way he sees fit. He kills all the villains without remorse, even bringing the Penguin up into space to allow him to be hit by an asteroid field. He also killed Detective Harvey Bullock, among several others. Commissioner Gordon brings this up to him one night and begins to irritate Bruce. Bruce threatens his daughter Barbara, but quickly puts an end to Jim's life. The Corps finally arrives, but he initiates blackout. This takes away all light around them, and his dark constructs surround the Corps. He kills everyone save but one guardian. But then when the guardian tries to warn Bruce of the power he wields and how corrupted it has become, his head is quickly ripped off. He has become the Dawnbreaker at the end of his world. He is a mixture of Bruce Wayne's Batman and Green Lantern. And in some versions he looks slightly zombie-like, but not all artists depict him the same way. The Batman Who Laughs arrives and recruits him along with Red Death and the Murder Machine. The Murder Machine, taking place on Earth -44. Alfred has been captured and tortured by the villains. When he refuses to tell the villains what they want to know about Batman, Bane lifts him up and breaks his back, killing him. Bruce re-watches the video over and over at the funeral of Alfred, while the rest of the League go up to mourn the loss and hope that Bruce joins them. They can't even have an open casket. Bruce asks Victor Stone, aka Cyborg, to help him finish what is called the Alfred Protocol. When they do so, they realize that flaws are in the system when the AI Alfred kills the villains in Arkham to protect Bruce. The Alfred Protocol merges with Bruce eventually, despite Victor's warnings for Bruce not to allow him into the Batcave systems, and together they take out the whole League. Finally, finishing what is left of the Justice League by tearing off Victor's head. And as before, The Dark Knights grow in number when the Batman Who Laughs recruits him. Out of all the evil Batman in the story, I like Murder Machine the least. This is not because he's a bad character. When I revisited his origin, I found him actually more compelling than I did the first time I read it. But just out of all of them, he is kind of the weakest. Not even in terms of power, it's just in terms of, you know, how interesting they are. The Drowned, taking place on Earth negative 11. Bryce Wayne is a gender-swapped version of the typical Batman. She hunted down and killed her Sylvester Kyle's murderer, this universe's Catwoman. She didn't believe that the Atlanteans had come in peace to their world. So she took the fight straight to Aquawoman, killing her with her trident. But this caused the Atlanteans to drown Gotham, along with other parts of the world. She genetically modified herself to be able to breathe underwater and lights the deep with her bat signal. She is able to release a dark fluid from her mouth which contains an army of what she calls dead water. This infects anyone it comes into contact with. Once again, she is convinced by the Batman Who Laughs to join their growing group. She is kind of the embodiment of paranoia, I think, for the Batman, but the fact that it's a female version and two is a mixture of Batman and Aquaman is pretty cool. The dead water that she releases is an interesting twist on an Aquaman villain, which I found quite cool. It's in the Aquaman comics, the dead water is almost like the Thing from John Carpenter's film. I mean, I know there's other versions as well, but John Carpenter's is the best in my opinion. So if you're familiar with that, it's a similar concept, at least in the original idea. The Merciless, taking place on Earth negative 12. Ares, the god of war, had forged a helmet that drastically increased his power. After 2 years of fighting, what was left of the League had finally reached him. Diana, aka Wonder Woman, dies. She had been in a relationship with this universe's Bruce Wayne, so he was quite torn up about her death. She had warned Bruce about the helmet's ability to corrupt, but when he saw his opportunity to use it instead of Ares, he took it, thinking he would be able to use it wisely, making war fair. He kills Ares and takes his power for himself. Unbeknownst to Bruce, Diana was only stunned. She comes back to the fight and finds Bruce in the aftermath of his actions, but she is quickly killed before she could take the helmet away from him. Wearing the helmet and a new suit of armor, the Wonder Woman symbol also resides on his chest, mixed in with his own bat symbol. A bizarre way of honoring the dead and the people he loved, I guess. He is the new god of war for his universe, but a universe that is moments from destruction. He is visited by the Batman Who Laughs and is manipulated, like the others, into being a new recruit. As well as having Ares' helm, he also wields the God Killer Sword, which is a powerful weapon in its own right. The Devastator, taking place on Earth negative 1. For whatever reason, the Superman of this Earth has been turned evil. He killed his own family, Lois Lane and Jonathan Kent, and he's even taken the fight to the rest of the League, seemingly having defeated all but Batman. Superman remarks about this, saying how in comparison to him, the rest of the League is incredibly weak, Batman especially. Batman acknowledges this, but even after having his arm holding his kryptonite spear lasered off by Clark, takes the chance to inject himself with the Doomsday virus, making himself into the monster that can kill Kryptonians. Taking the fight to Clark and inevitably killing him and having spikes run through him. This Batman, like all the others, is only after fulfilling his story as his world ends. As it falls apart, he, just like the others, gets recruited by The Batman Who Laughs. And finally, The Batman Who Laughs, taking place on Earth negative 22. Gotham is burning, and Batman has been drugged by the Joker. The Joker tells him about how he killed Jim Gordon, and how he listened to him call out for Barbara as his jaw burned away, melting. Joker is trying to find Batman's breaking point, even shooting a child's parents in front of her, and repeats the process over and over, with more children. Batman finally has enough, breaking free of his restraints, and pushing past the drug in his system, beating the Joker bloody. It doesn't kill him. The Joker taunts him on how this'll just keep going on and on forever. Crack. The Joker's dead. And with his broken neck, a green gas comes seeping from his gruesome grin. Days later, Batman and Superman watch over the yet uncured Joker children. Superman offers to help administer the next potential cure, seeing as the previous attempt had a nurse's throat ripped out by one of the children's teeth. Batman chuckles to himself. Superman notices it. Batman apologizes. It was poor timing. Batman calls the whole Bat family together in the cave, revealing that the gas had in fact infected him. It was only activated when Joker had died, remaining dormant until then. His last joke, his final laugh, his killer would become his replacement. When they try to offer help to him, he reveals that he brought them there so nobody would know. Only they would notice a change in his behavior. The rest wouldn't know until it was too late. He mows all of them down with automatic gunfire, grinning the whole time. 1 week later, the League is dead, except for Superman. His eyes are bleeding. Bruce has been using confiscated villain technology from the League to kill them. Revealing he has Superman's family, Jonathan Kent's eyes are bleeding too. Whatever is being used, it must only affect Kryptonians. Batman throws at John, Superman, and Lois a sample of black kryptonite, mutated. It causes them to kill Lois, and presumably each other. In the book where all these origins are revealed, at the end, following the Batman Who Laughs one, it is in fact mentioned that he's been the one telling all these stories, recruiting each Batman in service of the dark god Barbatos. This story is fully looked at in books such as the main Dark Knight's Metal series of comics that came out, that was written by Scott Snyder and illustrated by Greg Capullo, or in Dark Knight's Metal Resistance, which features characters such as Damian Wayne, Green Arrow, Nightwing, Harley Quinn, and Killer Croc, among others, showing what happened in other parts of the world, and in Gotham as well, during this event. The Batman Who Laughs has become a character unlike any other in recent memory. He is everywhere, showing up in various series and getting his own backstory explored even more. I have yet to read any of this extended stuff, but he has shown up in Scott Snyder's Justice League series, which I am reading. He's only appeared once or twice, but I'm looking forward to see if he shows up again. I'll admit, I'm trying to ignore my fatigue with the character, because I feel like if he's overused, then the appeal will be gone. But saying that, on my Instagram account, @ReeseO'ConnorImages, he is my profile picture, based on a picture I did of him. So that was, I guess I'm not sick of him yet. All these evil Batmen have really cool concepts. I would love to have them explored more, and maybe they will one day, but it seems as though the Dark Multiverse has been destroyed for now. Yeah, the Dark Knight's Metal event itself was really fun to read, but obviously the appeal for most people was all these evil Batmen. And lastly for this episode, I have my book recommendation for you guys. It's Jessica Jones, Alias, Volume 1 by Brian Michael Bendis. I have been reading this book over the last few days. I finished it the other night, and it was fantastic. I really look forward to reading the rest of the series. If you love this show, Jessica Jones, you will love the book, I'd say. It's a little bit more lighthearted, I guess, but that's more because in the show, Jessica is played as a constant hard-ass, whereas in the book she has, you know, a bit more, not personality, but she has a bit more humor to her. But it still maintains that great noir feel. It has characters that you wouldn't really expect to show up, mainly if you've only experienced Jessica Jones through the Netflix series like I have. But it shows that, you know, the universe is more connected in the comics. The art style is great as well. It really adds to the dark noir feel, and some would consider Jessica Jones, Alias, to be the best of the Marvel Max content. Most people would say Punisher, I'd say, which I've heard is the definitive version of the Punisher to read, and I will hopefully get into that eventually. But I would definitely agree that Jessica Jones, if it isn't the best, it's up there. And it's definitely a great example of what Bendis can do when he has room to experiment and do what he wants. I definitely want to read more. There's a few volumes, and I'll hopefully pick up volume 2 soon. So I'd just like to thank everybody for staying with this series. I've been really enjoying making this podcast, and this episode is probably going to be at least a good bit longer than they normally are, but you guys had to wait a little bit longer than you had in the last few weeks, so it's only fair that you got a little bit more. But yeah, thanks to everyone for listening. Hope you guys enjoyed. And if you guys have any ideas or things you'd like me to talk about in the coming episodes, feel free to let me know. You know, I've said it before, in the direct messaging on Instagram would be the best way to reach me for this podcast. And or even if you guys just want to talk about whatever I talk about in the podcast, if you have any questions, feel free. And until the next one, that's going to be it. I think we went through a lot of cool stuff today, and I'll try to get the other stories I talked about ready, and maybe I'll do that for the next episode. That'll just about do it. So I hope everyone, wherever you are in the world, you have a good day, and whatever you're doing, you do well at, whether it's work or some project maybe, if anything. I mean, everyone's coming back to school now and college and things like that, so until the next episode, which hopefully will be a bit quicker than this one, everyone have a good day / good night. I've been your host, Reese, and you've been listening to the State of the Multiverse podcast.